and brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust, and blues you can trust. Indigos feel, and white ones heal. Yellow scare, and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hey everyone, I'm Mark Marble.
And I'm Chad Bokelman.
And this is the Lantern Cast.
Episode 625.
You're right on cue, I have to sneeze. but maybe my willpower and I can fight it. Green Lantern Corps number 10.
Yeah. Lanterns United.
Woohoo!
The start of the new arc, I guess. We don't know what this is. I guess the new arc doesn't have a title yet, does it?
No, which is probably a good thing, in all honesty, considering the way things have been going. Plus, this is going to be the first time that Mr. Adams is not co-writing this book.
Yep, just Morgan Hampton.
Just Morgan Hampton. So let's just do that out of the way right off the bat. Yeah, in-issue episode, in-issue title is Back to Life, writer Morgan Hampton. We'll talk about the art. Lord knows we will talk about the art. I.G. Gara, Fernando Pissarin, Will Conrad and Claire Albert, Arif Prianto, Matt Herms, Dave Sharp, letterer, cover artist, Pissarin, Albert, and Prianto, variant cover artist. I'll do it for the change. Ryan Gonzalez, Tom Derenick, and Matt Herms. And I don't know why it's interesting. Scott Gadlutsky is thrown at the end the way he is. Assistant editor Jillian Grant, Kathleen Wineski, editor, and Paul, the ever-present Paul Kaminsky, remains editor. So try to do this relatively quickly. We are via a spaceship, not the ring. John Stewart and Kat Matui are heading back to OR after the Shirley Stewart AI ring found him in the dark sectors. And recruited him again to bring him back. And John Stewart does not seem particularly happy about this. And if nothing else, I do appreciate the fact that all the things that quote unquote the real John Stewart probably should have had problems with, and AI being talking like his mother and having a living construct of his dead sister, the things that really should bother pretty much everybody, it actually does bother this John Stewart. So I did like that, and the fact that the ring is dropped. This might be the irritant issue, because so many characters are being irritating in this issue, and John and Shirley's ring is one of them. So John's plan is just to show up on OA, which is kind of weird too, just to show up on OA to return the ring and pretty much make a cameo appearance and then leave. We cut to Kilowog, who looks like he's 1,000 pounds and needs to go on a diet, and one of the many horrible art pages in this issue, that he's training a whole bunch of Green Lanterns, including Kelly, including Aya, Sinestro's, whatever her name is, Sinestro's friend there that we saw early in the series. And was it Narf, right? Is it Narf?
Yeah.
Narf? I actually like Narf, so I felt bad that I forgot his name for a second. This is another one of those classic, well, we're going to put these recruits through their paces, and the real test is they're going to have to try to overcome these things without their rings. But that's really not the important part of this issue. In the Great Hall, which is nicely designed to be a meeting, like Knights of the Round Table for all the corps, we have Jessica trying to keep the peace here amongst representatives of many of the corps. Why Razor is representing the Red, that's a story for another day. Indigo One is there. That's cool. I guess Sinestro is yellow again. Like that's kind of predictable, but kind of, I think that happened off panel, I think. And while they're having this, discussing some of these territorial conflicts and issues between these Lantern Corps now all on OA, Ellie Rose picks up on the fact that John Stewart is back, and she runs out to greet him. John's kind of taken aback by the fact that OA is now the home to all the corps, and the fact that he's having trouble kind of processing this. You know, Cop Matui, this Cop Matui has no ties to the Green Lantern Corps whatsoever. So this is literally all, no pun intended, or maybe all pun intended. It's all green to her. So she's trying to figure this out. And again, Shirley Stewart's ring just has to chime in like, oh, I tried to tell you. I tried to tell you. And John Stewart is just, he's really not impressed by any of this. And he pretty much is saying the same thing. You know, I'm here. I'm going to leave. I'm not ready for this yet. And then conveniently enough, we find out that one of the science cell escapees, because that's one of the ongoing things here that everybody's trying to deal with. Priority one is a whole bunch of the science cell prisoners, you know, the ones they let out to try to help them. That, hey, we got to round these people back up again. Typical Green Lantern Corps. And one of the people that is on the loose is Fatality, which is another, I guess, Tremor in the Force thing. Because I think we talked about Fatality not that long ago. As passing, maybe even as a joke, because of the fact that, you know, Cop Matui was going to be back. So John puts on the ring and he finds the uniform interesting. He has Ellie Rose he puts her in charge of keeping an eye on Katma. And he flies off to deal with Fatality, which gives us one of the more interesting things, because for a shocking moment in this book over the last like umpteen issues, Freudian slip there. Joe actually doesn't know something. She doesn't know about Fatality. How could Joe, the all-knowing, not know about Fatality when she knows about even more obscure shit than that? We have Lantern Glynn is going to gets put in charge of this water baby. Now I'm assuming that's the water baby we saw earlier in the series.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who, of course, looked really innocent until he kind of takes the ring and plays with it. And then he goes inside Lantern Glynn, and we find out that this is definitely not a good thing. John and Fatality fight pretty much across Oa into different areas, including where Lorflees is. And John eventually just reasons with her and says, hey, there's another Zanshi. There's another Zanshi. And it's, you know, it's real. And essentially, which is kind of this part is weird too. Just the idea that, hey, if she is almost like a penitence, she has to kind of make amends for all the Green Lanterns that she killed in some half-ass way. And if she does that, then John's going to be nice enough to share the coordinates of Zanshi for her, so she can go back there. While this is going on, you know, Kelly is extremely obnoxious and during the training session and uses Aya to absorb Guy's ring to try to see if they can basically win this test, which, of course, they really can't, because it's like the Kobayashi Maru scenario. It was never winnable to begin with, but that wasn't the point. The point was to see how they work together. So Kilowog was kind of impressed by that. When John gives Fatality her marching orders that you're going to go and do this, find the families of all the Green Lanterns you killed, do the best you can to try to make amends. And if you do your job right, then we'll give you the coordinates of Zanshi. And Lantern Glynn is put in charge of basically babysitting her. But as soon as they're in the ship to fly off, we find, you know, the water blob that was inside Glynn appears, because Glynn is dead, and says, you can call me Enquar. The Green Lanterns destroyed both our homes. Why don't we return the favor? Thus endeth the issue. Next month, however, interesting, Enquar's origin and Effigy's eternal flame. So I guess we're going to see Effigy again.
Wasn't there a water being in the Thorn Run in the Dark Sectors with John's crew of lanterns?
You might be right, but I don't remember.
I feel like I remember that. Interesting, cool, with another point with the water baby. It entered him as a baby, came out as a fully grown man, but exited Glynn, leaving him a husk, because it probably absorbed all the water in his body.
Yep, probably use that to evolve or grow.
Yeah.
Mature, however we want to look at it.
Yeah, so that was cool. I also don't buy the whole, you know, Zanshi's back and you do this for me, I'll tell you where. And it's not necessarily like, do I think John would pitch this idea? Sure. Do I think Fatality would fall for it? No. Like, obviously, we know he's sincere, but I don't know that Fatality would believe him.
Plus, with all the personal baggage between the two of them, I don't know. It was just the way it went down seemed a bit odd, and it didn't seem. I mean, obviously, there's no reason to believe we're ever going to find out whether she would have actually stuck to the game plan, or whether there was a part of her that actually felt, whether it was just Well, it probably wouldn't have been out of guilt. It would have been out of compulsion because of the fact that, well, I have no choice but to do it. And you kind of hope along the journey that maybe some real emotion, you really eventually it would resonate with her. But it appears we're never going to get that because of the mission being hijacked by the water glob there right off the bat.
Yeah. And just because we're already on the topic, there's a mistake in here. A new god named Isak, who wanted its energy, pulled it out of Hypertime. It's not a copy or some alternate version. It's you home, like it was never destroyed.
Yep.
Way to go, editorial. This is the kind of shit you're definitely supposed to be catching. But just mark another one down. We should have a counter, days without editorial incident.
Yeah, it's embarrassing.
Yep. But, you know, I'm not going to harp on a spelling mistake as much as I would something else. Something they should have done is I noticed, and this is maybe something weird to notice, when Jessica is coming out of the meeting, she says, as for Larfleeze, I think he took my good brush. I'll have a talk with him. When we saw Larfleeze messing with a pile of stuff, there should have been a brush in the panel.
Yeah, I would agree. It doesn't look like he got a particularly fair shake of territory too, based on what he's got. I mean,
have you seen the map? I posted it on our.
I looked at it. I didn't pay a whole lot of attention to it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, he's on an island, in the middle of the ocean. All the rest of the territories are just, you know, like countries are divided up like countries or continents or whatever. But it seems as if there's only one ocean. It's not, you know, split up in a very obvious way. It just sort of stretches across most of the planet, and it's not divided like our oceans are, sort of. And his is like a smaller Australia in the middle of the ocean. And the fact that it's called Sandron, it looks like a desolate sandy island. not a lot of brain power was spilled there.
No, and we all know how this is going to go anyway.
Yeah. It's funny because, you know, one of the things we criticize, or you more so because you don't like the United Planets and everything, but one of the things that we leveled at early Jeremy Adams stuff is not wanting to see all the politics. I'm actually curious now about the politics of all these lanterns operating on the same planet. I want to see more of this, and I don't want it to be like petty bullshit about like, hey, you're encroaching on our borders and like all this other stuff. Like, I want to see politics maybe combined with what we were like, the stuff we were originally taught about the emotions. Does this have sway? Like how, you know, blues amp greens and like all of that stuff that we were originally taught, like how does it work when they're all so close to each other? And does it, you know, I don't know. I would love to see more of it and not make it trivialized, like just little spats on the council and some bullshit. I don't know.
No, I agree. I think that there is absolute room for some exploration of the politics here. And it makes more sense because these are concepts and characters that we give a crap about as opposed to ones that we don't. And things that are actually tied to Green Lantern instead of just infidels, somebody just infiltrating what shouldn't be there, which was the whole United Planets thing to begin with. And an illegitimate, that's probably the best way to put it. A regime is probably the better way. That's probably the better way, considering the way they ran things. It was a regime. They were more like dictators anyway, despite what they wanted you to believe. Man, the artwork is all over the map in this issue.
Yeah.
When Pissarin's doing it, it's okay. But when he's not doing it, oh my God. I got to be honest with you. When you look at some of that stuff, like that first panel with Kilowog and company at the training and things like that, and other than Narf, I mean, Narf is the only one who looks halfway decent, I think, honestly. But the reality is, you cannot tell me that there aren't better artists out there that would kill to be doing this job. I mean, this is just the art. We can talk about the writing all we want in general. I don't mean this issue in particular. And there are lots of things to poke holes in that. But man, some of the art that passes these days compared to what the art was like in the in the 80s and the 70s and maybe even some of the 90s. It's like, wow, this stuff is just, it's bad. It's real bad.
Yeah, no, I agree. I will say one thing I noticed at the top of the thing, coloring wise, who's the colorist? Arif Pronto and Matt Herms. There's some good coloring and stuff, especially that very first page, because they're coming out of hyperspace. So they're in hyperspace. And all, first of all, the glow of the dash and the glow of the ring and how that affects things. But if you notice, we get four panels of John and Katma. And the first three panels, they're relatively darkly lit because they're in the ship and they're in hyperspace. And then it says exiting hyperspace. And then the panel is noticeably brighter because they have exited the dark hyperspace. And now, especially when you turn the page, that massive beam of light coming off of Oa, it's much lighter on their skin.
Yeah.
So, there's definitely some good things to be had here, at least coloring wise.
Yeah, and again, the beginning art, which clearly is must be Pissarin, is good. I mean, it's fine. I mean, Katma looks great. Even John Stewart in a much different look than we're used to seeing him in. I think that's fine. I understand it might be easier from a reference point to do this, but referencing the second part of the Thorn Run, by the way they grouped it together, graphic novel wise, the name of it was kind of weird because I'm seeing this. What the hell is Horatius? And I thought I had to actually look that up, and it's like, oh, that's what that's the name they slapped on the second half of the trade or whatever, the collection of the Thorn Run. It's like, yeah.
Yeah. Another example of the art, well, two examples of the art. One, Narf almost, his like big form almost looks very, very, very close to his regular form instead of the drastic difference we saw before.
Yes.
Last time he went big. So the only way you really could have definitively told that he went bigger is because, one, he's equal to the size of the construct thing that he's fighting, and Kelly and Aya in front of him.
Yes.
And the other thing is, man, Larfleeze looks awful. And so he's literally bald at the end. He says, get off my land. Do you see that?
Yeah, I did, but I'm trying to go back to it now because I'm
when he tells Yara about the new Zanish.
Yes, I see it now. When he's holding her sword.
He looks like a deformed Lex Luthor. Yeah, I don't know. And it's not like he looks great in the rest of the panels.
No, but
they totally forgot his hair / flames there.
Yeah, I'm not really happy with what they're doing here. We know the batteries look like crap. I mean, I guess we can forgive them at the moment for having the uniformity of the batteries, considering how they had to be built.
Yeah.
But I did find it interesting about their discussions about, you know, when Sinestro and Razor were having their issues, which again, where the hell is Atrocitus? Why is Razor being the spokesperson for the Red Lantern Corps? I understand why, based on from our perspective, why Razor would probably be the one we would want, but it doesn't mean he would be the one they would want. And, you know, it would be a problem with Atrocitus. But the idea that, well, when Jessica's pretty much saying to Sinestro, hey, you pretty much got to cut them slack because this is like the only place we can pretty much put their blood river or whatever, their blood for their blood magic and not contaminating the rest of the water on the planet.
Yeah. Speaking of Razor, isn't Aya technically wearing his ring?
Oh, the Green Lantern ring? I think so.
I think because I'm also surprised I'm not surprised. I thought the way it read to me when he picked up the Red Lantern ring is like, you know, that I know how to use and can contribute to this fight. I'm still learning this other ring. He was looking to Aya, be like, hey, can I sort of regress a little bit and use the ring? I don't know that I expected him to get the Green Lantern ring back. I also didn't expect him to stay a red. And I don't know. I'm very curious about where his head's at. And I'm very curious about him and Aya. Like, if we're going to bother bringing these guys into the universe and saying that, you know, whether it's, you know, word for word as it happened in the animated series, happened in continuity, or just sort of the general broad strokes, some iteration of those missions and everything happened in continuity at some point, then we also have to stay true to the relationship that was built between these two. And to have her just wordlessly in training, wearing his ring, which is, you know, they're a couple, you know, wearing somebody else's ring is a significant thing. You can make something out of that. And then him just sort of in the background, pissily discussing border problems, like, come on. Like, if we're going to bother to do this, I'm not saying it should take over the comic, but let's do this. Let's just not say, oh, now we had them join a little fight and the fight's over, but they're here now, so let's just act like they always have been. No, there's still shit to resolve here.
Depending on how we're going to see these characters divvied up, then maybe that's stuff Jeremy's still going to do. And this is, and Morgan Soul maybe has some carte blanche to use these characters, but there's certain aspects of, or certain things that are meant to happen or that are going to happen that he has to pretty much just take a back seat on. And so maybe he can use these characters, but he's not supposed to basically bring them together. And that's going to be Jeremy's job. I'm not saying it makes a lot of sense. One of the things I thought that was looking back at this now is that when you go back and you see the scene when, you know, when the page, when John Stewart shows up to take on Fatality, that we actually see, what's his face? Water Blobby there, that he's actually in an adult form first.
Yeah.
And Glenn gets pushed into him, and then he kind of reforms as a baby. So that might have been a strategy to reform potentially as a baby, or maybe that's what always happens whenever their physical form gets damaged the first time. They always revert back to being a baby. But also on that page, going along with the irritant theme between Shirley Stewart's ring and between Kelly and Joe. What the hell is Joe's comment about? He really knows how to pick him, doesn't he? About John Stewart's room. What the f*** does that even mean?
I have no idea.
I mean, first of all, who else does she know that John Stewart's been romantically involved with?
I don't know that she does know. She's just
being a smartass.
Yeah.
I think Joe needs a heavy dose to shut the F up because she's just, and who's ever, and they're not doing her any favors. I know at this point, it's almost like, for me, not everyone, but it's like I'm waiting for that moment when Joe does. That's why it was kind of refreshing that she actually was clueless. Oh, my God. They didn't write her as, Ray, who knows from the sequel trilogy, where she knows everything at all the time, can do anything at any moment. And even that, Ray was a better character, I think, than Joe has been post Far Sector. But the idea that the stuff what they're doing with Kelly, man, it's like, I mean, this is not the way to get people to like her character. And people who already don't like her, you're not going to be changing people's minds by having her just be like 100% attitude and like a completely untrained novice's body.
Yeah. This panel that you brought up, or this page of the water adult, it makes sort of sense, especially if he teams up with Fatality later on in the issue. They're going after escaped prisoners, some of whom are clearly still on the surface of Oa, so he could just be another prisoner, but why they don't clock it and recognize him. I mean, he's making, compared to the way he looks later on at the end of the issue, he's obviously maintaining a very, you know, amorphous sort of state. He's not a lot of defining features, so maybe they're just like unable to distinguish him as who he's supposed to be because he's not putting on that face, so to speak. But he could just be an escaped prisoner from the science cells, which leads me to believe, okay, well then all the rest of the people around here can't all be escaped prisoners from the science cells. And look at all these buildings. So that makes me think, what else is going on Oa?
Yes. If you would have to go back, is this would seemingly, like we discussed, this would seemingly be the water baby thing that was being booked and being processed by Guy early on, right, in the series, which of course he was there because he was apprehended for something, because that's why they were there. They were being rounded up by the Green Lantern Corps.
Right.
So the only thing you could assume is that maybe over time, naturally, he kind of grew. He, you know, because maybe they don't stay in that form for very long. And what may, and who knows, maybe he chose to maybe it's not a choice. Maybe it's a cycle. Maybe anytime his physical body gets damaged enough unexpectedly that he has to revert back to the baby form. Or maybe he did it on purpose thinking, oh, if I reform as a baby, then they're gonna overlook me, and then I can, now is my opportunity to get out. But it is odd. And again, this goes back to, you know, the master plan. Let's rally the troops, we got to fight together, just so once we win, you get to go back in jail. like we talked about. It was never much of a good sales pitch, even by that John Stewart. And for and now that we find out that Fatality was one of the people behind bars.
Yeah, I'm just, and again, I'm very curious about these other people, because we, especially now that we have all of the Lanterns on the same planet, then it becomes important now, information about the planet. We know about the Malthusians, we know about Malthus, we know about lots of things about, the Guardians and all of that stuff. But what do we know about Oa? It's a question I haven't really considered. What do we know about the planet Oa? Because there are clearly, at least in this iteration, it's not just the home of the Green Lantern Corps. Okay? And it's obviously not just the home of all the Lanterns, because there are regular everyday people here. So unless these are transplants and like the family of the various Lanterns that now exist on this planet, and they want to be close to their loved ones, so they just, immigrated here, I don't know, then we have to then think about what else goes on Oa, because we have a map of the planet now, which makes me think, okay, well, now what are Oa's major exports? What are their import? Like, I'm thinking of everything about this, and then they give us this thing, which, by the way, in the map, they give us, for those of you who haven't seen it, I posted it on our Instagram, on our Blue Sky, and on our Twitter, so go check it out. The map is not inside the comic. It is one of the variant covers of this issue. Tom Derenick, or whatever, his variant cover, if you can find it. I think it's cover C, if you're looking for it. It's a map of Oa, and there's a piece of it that's zoomed in and to give us a very, kind of like, in this particular section of this city, what are the things here? And we see the central power battery, and close to that is the Citadel, close to that is the Science Sales, Lantern Crypt. We see Simon Baz's garage here, although it says Simon Baz, I think.
Simon Biatch.
Simon Baz's garage. We see the foundry. We see GL Living Quarters. We also see Warriors Bar, which is why I posted this image, because we haven't heard of Warriors in forever, let alone that it still exists on Oa, especially after all the various central power battery explosions that took out half the city.
His insurance rates must be through the roof.
So I'm of two minds about it. Like, do I want the comic to become about telling me about the planet? No, that's not why I read a Green Lantern comic. I would also be very curious to learn about that. And also, the other side of the equation is, how the fuck have I never considered in my life going, what do we know about Oa the planet? Because, of course, it makes sense that the Green Lantern Corps and everything operates here. But did we all forget collectively that it's a planet that's supposed to be the center of the universe? So why wouldn't it be the center of other functionality across the universe? Why have I never thought of this? Am I stupid?
Probably because it keeps getting blown up all the time.
It's true.
we're like at an OR 5.0 at least at this point. Who cares anymore?
Just, you know, like, what? Challenge. Dan, if you're listening to this, do an episode about an entire video. What do we know about Oa? I want to know.
Go get him, Dan.
That would be some deep research that I do not envy, but I challenge thee. Sorry, I had to bring that up, because the map just raises all kinds of questions for me. Like, I was just surprised, to be honest, that Warriors was still there. But anyways.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, probably if we wait about 5 or 6 months, none of these things are going to be there anyway. So if we're lucky enough that Oa still exists.
That's true. Mogo was still nearby, right?
Yeah, that was one of the things, not when we first were, when I was first recapping, but when you were talking about the leading into that splash page with John and Katma, I almost mentioned that. Yeah, Mogo's hanging around. But yeah, we'll see. I'm telling you, Relic's just around the corner.
Yeah.
One-stop shopping, man. One-stop shopping. Everybody's on one planet now. Makes it so much easier to wipe out the entire emotional spectrum. They're all on one planet. I mean, unless the Lanterns were to do something miraculous and work together, but we know, even if there's a chance of that, it's never going to happen from a storytelling perspective.
I will say, despite our criticism and stuff like that, I am slightly encouraged by the fact that on Morgan Hampton's first solo outing, we get Fatality back, and the very next issue, we're going to get Effigy back. I'm feeling very 90s nostalgia.
Okay, you're a slut. No, you are correct that it is a nice swing. I can't say swinging for the fences necessarily, but it's nice to know that he is referencing some of the older stuff. And it's all, I also thought, like I mentioned, I thought it was refreshing that this John Stewart didn't just go, oh, that's cool, I got a ring that sounds like my mom. And hey, yeah, there's an energy construct of my dead sister who I feel guilty about. Hey, that's just, gee, that's great. No, he's like, I don't care that you talk. It's like, I'm showing you the bare minimum respect I can because you sound like my mom, but shut the F up, ring. And I don't know what to make out of you because you're a living construct, supposedly, of my dead sister. But so, yeah, I think at least this John Stewart, the real John Stewart, is having real reactions to what almost everybody should have had to all of these situations. So you got to give, so you have to cut some of the Green Lantern Corps some credit or cut them some slack because, as we all know, it took Jeremy Adams like about 10 issues to acknowledge the AI in the ring anyway that we knew was there. So they might not have been aware either.
I have two more points, but one of them, I'm going to freak out. So the lighter one, I'm curious how Katma is doing. She's obviously, she's been told a few things alongside John about why Ellie's back and what happened to the mom and all of that. She says, we're not married. I mean, he was with her, but we're just taking it slow. How these two reconnected and she accepted all of this. And did she know a John? Like, how different is her hyper time? I don't know. And I don't even want to, but hopefully we will get into it at some point. I'm just curious how these two reconnect. I want to see the flashback of him finding her, because him walking up to Katma, at least early, depend like where in her time. I don't know. I don't know how hyper time even works, but like where in her timeline or like whatever. Him just walking up to her and being like, you know,
hey, baby.
Yeah.
You're not going to believe this, but
the old Katma, and some would say even up until she died, wouldn't have taken that bullshit in stride. She would not have just accepted it and been like, all right, cool, here we go. Yeah. I don't know. I hope we get a flashback because also, hey, the fact that Fatality is back. Effigy is coming. We have Katma back. So
it'll be real fun when Carol shows up.
And I have one final point. So the last thing I want to talk about, did you notice the timeline mention in this thing?
And you have to say that now that I closed the book.
You don't have to go.
I will go reopen it.
Two sentences into the narrative boxes. I died recently, or rather, a copy of me did.
Oh, you're right. When he sums up, when we're getting the compressed time frame for how long John Stewart has been gone.
A few months. That's all the time that has passed since John Stewart ascended and split himself in half. We've had Dark Crisis and everything it brought. We've had War Journal. We've had the entirety of the Adams run thus far. And it's been a few months. Are you serious? Is that how compressed all the events of the DC timeline are? It's only been a few months?
I don't know what to tell you. I did read it when I read it earlier today. I did notice it, but
am I wrong for being aghast?
Well, no. I mean, it could be slang. You could just be using it as, you know. But the reality is, it does. You know, realistically speaking, it doesn't make any sense. No.
Yeah, I'm baffled by the timeline. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe the Dark Sector is. Time is compressed or some sort of, the time is, well, different.
Well, that is true, knows? Because I think the time was different. I think we figured that out. So that could be the out, The out could be for him, it's only been a few months. But here, it's been much longer. That probably actually is a legitimate out. That for him,
maybe.
Yeah.
As much as I don't want to, I'll have to find where they talk about the Dark Sector and how it works in the Thorn Run.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that the time when the Dark Sector didn't function the same. So I think that is probably the explanation for. So from his perspective, it's only been a couple of months since he's been in the Dark Sector or whatever. But thank God Cat Matui isn't pregnant, because then that's another thing. Wow, time does fly, doesn't it?
Also, if it's only been a few months, I'm also I'm even more curious about him finding her and convincing her to partner up with him like this.
He is an ascended being. Let me show you my ascension.
Who knows what adjustments John has made to his copies? That's it, though. That's all I got. I remember reading that and being like, what? Really?
And they left out the easy joke. It's like, my God, I go away for 2 months and look at what friggin' happens.
But that's all I got. All right, what's next?
I got a bunch of I have a bunch of small things, I suppose. But it depends if what do you have anything?
Maybe you need to become an ascended being.
Chad. Oh, you ignorant slut, Chad. That was good though. That was good. Oh God. It's not Facebook good. But it's good. Oh, remember, I still have the ultimate blackmail over you, Chad, because of the best blooper we've ever had.
Oh yeah,
Lantern Cast 700. It's seeing the light of day.
Chad, you ignorant slut.
So back to where I was going with this before I was rudely interrupted. Do you have anything else of consequence you want to discuss? Not about the issue. We know that's dead and buried. But I mean, no.
I mean, I finished Yellowstone. Okay. That wasn't a surprise. I was pretty much mostly done with it. Man, it made me. Speaking of politics again, it made me want to get into the politics of what happened behind the scenes for Kevin Costner to just straight up exit. Because I actually Googled it and read up on like. You know, I Googled like Kevin Costner comments on exit from Yellowstone or something. And I found like an article from like October of last year where he was talking about how they had signed him for like three more seasons. And then that contract was done. But then they backpedaled and said they were only going to do another season. But then when he committed to that full season and they went back and changed things, they didn't even have the scripting for all 10 episodes they were supposed to do. So he did 8 instead, which is why it became a half season where it was like, you know, season 5, part 1 and season 5, part 2. And like all of the hecticness plus, and I forget what other Kevin Costner project he had, like Horizon, I think it was called.
Yes, it was his ill-fated Horizon project that either made it easy for him to walk away or where the conflict was, depending on whose story, whose version of the story you believe.
Yeah, I just like don't get me wrong. I don't think Yellowstone is this groundbreaking show. I enjoyed it. I thought it was really well done in a lot of different parts. Some of the characters fell a little flat for me. Some of the interactions, some of the story arcs or whatever. But Kevin Costner wise. And, you know, do I necessarily like all of the things that John Dutton is portrayed to be and all the things he is? Not necessarily, but Kevin Costner does a good job portraying him. And I would have liked to see the natural, more well thought out ending instead, as opposed to having to essentially kill off his character and thus sell the ranch, you know, spoilers, but you know, and all of this other stuff and figure out the inheritance tax and all this other bullshit that had to happen because, you know, the character suddenly died and just disappeared off the show. It's one of the first times I've ever actually been pulled into and curious about behind the scenes Hollywood drama stuff. So I was looking into that. I thought it was a decent ending despite the, you know, the rocky reason for it ending the way it did. I think it deserved a better ending, but I think it did fine enough for what it had to work with.
Hey, at least there's a built-in excuse there, as opposed to our Game of Thrones ending.
That's true.
Hey, we have the band back together, and we still crap the bed. and I could come fight. I could swing back at you, Chad, for your joke at me, but I'm gonna let it go. All right, so I got a bunch of stuff. So let's talk about, from what I've seen, Predator Badlands. I really liked Predator Badlands.
I heard good things.
I will openly admit, however, this seems to be the line of demarcation here, potentially. It greatly depends on how invested one, I think, is, potentially, in the Predator franchise, with a small F and in quotes, because I don't think it's ever been much of a franchise. But it depends how really invested you are in the lore and what you consider to be canon. Well, not so much canon, but what you consider is to be necessary for a Predator movie. And because this, I mean, now, mind you, in story, there's plenty of reasons why what happens in this movie happens. So they make it crystal clear and why what's going on. And so the slight differences in why this character, why Deck has to deal with the stuff that he has to deal with, and the way and how and why he has to deal with it, is perfectly understandable based on the story. Because I'm not huge into Predator, have I seen all of them? Yes, I've seen all of them. But in all honesty, other than the first one, I don't feel overly. I can't honestly tell you I ever saw the full thing. This the full second one with Danny Glover. I know I've seen bits of it, and I know I've seen the ending. I can't actually tell you that I've ever seen straight through, even if it's in different sittings, picking up where you left off, the entire Predator 2. But I certainly have seen Predators and The Predator. I didn't see the Hulu movies because I don't have Hulu. But
does that include, what was the Native American one?
Yeah, I didn't see Prey. I didn't see that one
either. Yeah, that was the only Predator movie I saw a trailer for, and I was like, oh, I kind of want to see that.
And obviously I saw Alien, both the Alien versus Predator movies, but yeah. I would say, other than the original, to me this was the best one, and I think they did a really cool job with it, and wherever they go with it next would be interesting, wherever they choose to go with it. So I forget what's his name, the guy who's basically the showrunner or the franchise runner at the moment. But he definitely has his finger on the pulse, I think, of what works, because he's the one that's been involved in with Prey and Killer of Killers, the animated movie, and this one. So he gets that franchise sadly better than Ridley Scott did when he revisited Alien for the two prequels and then went off the rails. So there's that. One thing I wanted to talk about ever so briefly, only because I don't think, I mean, you may have a little bit to say, but probably not, but it doesn't interest you as much. But this happened about a month ago, but we've been so busy with crap that it's kind of dying out now. But I would feel remiss if I didn't touch upon it at all, that probably about a month ago, we started hearing this, all these stories started coming out about how miraculously, you know, the real problem with Lucasfilm and Star Wars was never Kathleen Kennedy. Oh, it was Bob Iger. Bob Iger was the real villain behind the scenes. Bob Iger was interfering in this, and he was setting up Kathleen Kennedy, you know, to take the fall and all, which I don't believe any of it. 8,000 ways to Sunday for multiple reasons. First of all, you don't set up a scapegoat or a fall guy if you never use them as the fall guy, which means get rid of her. If you wanted to blame all the problems for Lucasfilm and Star Wars on Kathleen Kennedy, then the point was, at some point you would fire her, and that would be the justification for firing her, because she's done such a lousy job and she did this and she did that. You don't set somebody up as a boogeyman and just don't do anything with it. Plus, I've never heard any evidence to say that somebody put a gun to Kathleen Kennedy's head to hire all the wrong people that she's hired for wrong projects that have never seen the light of day. But then she had the power to fire them and move on from them. And to me, this is a classic example of two things rolled into one. You have the history is written by the winners. And as shocking as it is, no one would have ever had this in their bingo card, that it certainly appears, with Bob Iger leaving, I believe, in 2026, that Kathleen Kennedy is actually going to outlast him twice. Which is stunning that that's possible. And the fact that the emperor has holes in his underwear concept, that everybody knows Bob Iger is leaving. Nobody's afraid of Bob Iger anymore. And the bloom has been off the Bob Iger rose for a long time after his triumphant return to Disney. So that's why you had Kevin Feige either earlier this year or the end of last year using the same excuse that he was blaming Bob Chapek for, which never made any sense, was, you know, it's the Disney Plus content stuff that's killed us. And he used the same excuse again, except this time it was being pointed accurately at Bob Iger, which, of course, doesn't explain the green lighting of shitty projects. It just means, well, we had to create this extra content for Disney Plus, which was always a Bob Iger problem because he's the one who created Disney Plus. So I think this is just an example of kind of like rats jumping off a sinking ship, and people who know they're going to outlast this guy now are saying, well, you know, he's the problem. And don't get me wrong, Bob Iger is a problem in a lot of ways. He helped create or allow the culture that has taken place in Disney to fester. And, you know, for lack of a better term, the inmates running the asylum where their own personal or political agendas are more important than telling universal stories that are going to appeal to the audience in large numbers. No, we have to have these check boxes. And that's all came to be under Iger. That's not a Chapek problem. So there's plenty of blame at Bob Iger, and he's done a lot of things wrong. But do I think he's the one responsible for why Star Wars went into the crapper by itself, or why Lucasfilm has been a disaster for the most part? At least 60%, at least 60 to 70% of what Kathleen Kennedy has been in charge of has been bad, major project wise. Yeah, I don't buy that at all. But it would be remiss of it if we didn't talk about it, just because it would seem like I'm avoiding it because obviously I've been anti Kathleen Kennedy for a long time. So now to at least address the story, I feel like we should. And man, I think it just gives more and more credence to the rumors that no matter what the reason was, or what the actual, I should say what the terms were, we would know what the reason was. But the idea, like these rumors were going around several years ago, that the reason Kathleen Kennedy hasn't been canned is because George Lucas put in some serious ironclad clauses in the president of Lucasfilm's contract that it was virtually impossible to fire them unless, I think, the morality clause, that's what the rumor, that the morality clause was the only way you could really fire a president of Lucasfilm, not because of how bad they did their job. But it kind of gives more credence to that, because why in the world would he keep her there even now? But I have one more thing, but that's the last thing on that.
I remember I had one other thing, but I think it's specifically Lantern relevant, so maybe we can end on it. I don't know.
Okay.
Unless yours is. So.
No, mine isn't. But this is a little game for you, Chad. It's like, Chad,
I want to play a game.
As we all know, and most of us know anyway, that the Doomsday trailer is fast approaching. Mm-hmm. The Avengers Doomsday trailer will probably be out in about a month, a little over a month now. I think 19th or 18th is when Avatar drops. So this game we're going to play is ever so brief, but it's based on, and these are the parameters for the game. Regarding the trailer, if we work under the base belief that 99% of what we see in this trailer are going to be characters that we already know are in this movie, thanks to that ridiculously dragged on chair reveal. But if we also go with the belief that at least, even if it's just post title shot up to end the trailer, that we will see at least one character that has not officially been confirmed for this movie, I'm going to give you five characters who that could be. So I want you to tell me, you can answer these two ways. I'm not going to say one of two ways, however you'd like to answer it. I'm going to give you five characters who have not been officially confirmed for this movie that could fill that role of, oh, this is a big, you know, get the audience pumps post title shot in the trailer, right at the end, right before the trailer ends, no matter how they do it, this reveal of this character actually being in this movie that we don't know officially yet. So I'm going to give you five characters. You can answer it both ways, or just one of two ways. Which character you think is most likely to be that character, and which character you would like it to be, because those don't necessarily have to be one and the same. So here are the five characters. So you got Star-Lord, you have Wolverine, you got Scarlet Witch, you have Spider-Man, take that as you may, it's kind of open-ended, but still, it's Spider-Man, and you have Steve Rogers. So if you were going to pick one that you think it's likely to be, or which one you would like it to be, answer either of both ways that you'd like. I mean, there's obviously other characters we could have included, because there's a lot of characters that haven't been confirmed. But I tried to pick one that the audience would probably have some kind of visceral reaction to, though not equally, because obviously I think some...
Likely to be, I think, Spidey, just because of the projects and stuff like that, the way things line up. would like to be. So, like, Cap would be would almost be a no-brainer. The problem is, I think you, no matter how you would bring, unless it's a multiverse thing, no matter how you bring him back, you, and no matter how you feel about how his story ended after Endgame, you sort of undercut what you did to end his story.
It depends how, because there's a lot of rumors why and how he could be in the movie. But I personally
would be happy to see Wanda, because I didn't like how her story ended. I didn't like that it ended.
Yeah. I mean, the safest bet would be Spider-Man, regardless of what Spider-Man it happens to be, because that's the caveat. We assume it would be Tom Holland Spider-Man, but it could be Tobey Maguire Spider-Man. It could be any Spider-Man. It could be a combination of characters. It could be Wolverine and the Spider-Man. You'll find out, hey, it's not Tom Holland. It's Tobey Maguire. But I agree, Spider-Man is the most likely. I think the only one that would get a real pop other than Spider-Man. I mean, Wolverine people would like, but I don't know if it makes as much sense. If you're looking at it from the perspective of pumping the audience up about a project, which still is, people are kind of not really sure what this thing is. Clearly, and Steve Rogers as Steve Rogers, not Captain Hydra Steve Rogers, our Steve Rogers, or Steve and Peggy together. I could even live with seeing friggin' Captain Carter if it's Steve and Captain Carter. But I'd say Steve would be the one, if you're trying to build anticipation and get people pumped for something that's still a year away, Steve would be the number one choice. I would not mind it being Scarlet Witch, but my fear the problem with Scarlet Witch is it's so likely that they're going to end up having her be manipulated and used by Dr. Doom that do we really need to see that again? If they're going to bring her back just to be bad again, is that really worth bringing her back? So that's the only thing. Now, you could redeem her in the sense that she could be manipulated or controlled in Doomsday, but then it's part of the big solution in Secret Wars. But I don't know. I almost probably should have put Loki on the list, but we know Loki's in the movie, so I guess I couldn't have.
No.
Loki would get a pop. If they wanted to put a character at the end who wasn't in the bulk of the trailer to get a pop and not reveal anybody who has not been officially confirmed yet, Loki would probably be the coolest one to do. Because Loki, especially after Loki season 2, I think a lot of people are looking forward to seeing that version of Loki in Doomsday. But I was just curious. I thought of this the other day when they're I would agree. Spider-Man's the most likely, and I think I would like it to be Steve. I think seeing Steve Rogers would make a lot of people more enthusiastic and interested in the movie, knowing that, yeah, Chris Evans is 100% in the movie.
I mean, it would excite me too, but it would all pivot on how they do it.
Right. And that would be part of it. It would, for people who haven't been paying attention to a lot of the rumors and speculation, it would instantaneously say, okay, how are they going to do this? And how is this related? That's it. Literally all I got. So what's your Green Lantern stuff?
It's about lanterns again.
At least we're consistent the last 3 weeks.
It's about something we're famous for, Mark.
Oh, our big scoop?
No. The fact that every time we talk about something, a day later, news comes out. Because we recorded our last episode where we talked about lanterns and the news and everything that it was coming in after Supergirl on the 5th of November. On the 6th of November, Lantern still slated for an early 2026 release on HBO Max per Warner Brothers Discovery's latest Q3 shareholder letter. Literally, this post is November 6th, 7:53 a.m. Hours, Mark, after we recorded, something came out that said, nope, that's not the case. I actually found the PDF of the Warner Brothers Discovery shareholder letter, which I can give you if you want to leak it or whatever, or you can just edit this part out if you don't want to do that. And in the second paragraph, it's titled, of the second page, It's titled DC Studios, and it says, importantly, with its first theatrical release, Superman, DC Studios marked a new era and critical first step on its 10-year journey to deliver, deliver fans a fresh and cohesive storyline across film and television while bringing new heroes and villains to the surface. Building on Superman's foundation, upcoming DC Studios projects include Lanterns, which will debut on HBO Max in early 2026, Supergirl and Clayface, and it, you know, goes on from there to list them through, which is Supergirl, Clayface, and then Man of Tomorrow, which is the follow-up to Superman. It talks a bit about that too, but this is the actual Q3 shareholder letter from WB, which I WB Discovery, which I think, and we don't know whatever you know, the Hollywood Reporter's source would have been for them thinking that it was after Supergirl, but a letter to the shareholders, I think, trumps whatever they're thinking at this point. I don't know.
But that's, but didn't you say the language said it's still expected or still expects to drop to premiere? That doesn't.
So that was the headline.
Yeah.
It's still slated.
Still slated. It's still.
Which is why I went to the actual source to read what the actual shareholder letter says. I found the PDF and I did a control F search for the keyword lantern so I could find it in the letter, because it's a 9-page long document.
I will feel if this is resolved when James Gunn talks about it one way or the other. When he confirms, yes, it absolutely is coming out, you know, before Supergirl. So that's our next source, is we have to go to James Gunn himself and we have to, like, listen, man. I think it would be better for us if it comes out in the first part of 2026. I mean, like you mentioned, the Hollywood Reporter obviously got it. Obviously, there was a reason why whoever their source was firmly believed that this is going to change. But it doesn't mean that it's going to change. So I think at the moment it's still up in the air. I mean, I think it probably gives more. If we had to bet, maybe now we probably would bet a little bit more on it's going to stick to its original release time frame. But either way, we're going to have to know soon, because if it's coming out in the first half of 2026, it's almost 2026 now. So we're going to have a target date. They're going to have to tell us if it's going to be coming out.
No, I will try and push the buttons and send a message. Oh, not a send a message. I'll send some social media posts tagging James Gunn and asking him. I'll give him the opportunity to answer in reply to us. Because he, lots of people are active on social media, but James Gunn does talk and answer questions and stuff on social media at seemingly random. So it could work.
We have a better shot getting him to reply than in most instances, because you just have to stick a microphone in James Gunn's face. He's going to talk. you can be homeless on the street and hold up a bottle in a paper bag, and James Gunn's probably going to start talking to you for 5 minutes if you have whatever questions you have for him.
Composing it as we speak, but yeah, that's the news. I only mention it because I give more credence to a shareholder letter than the unnamed source, if any, that the Hollywood Reporter says for, quote, we expect Lanterns will now come after Supergirl.
Yeah, I mean, on the surface, I would tend to agree with that, but I don't know, unless they're trying to quell some, not necessarily discontent, but they're just trying to make it seem like, everything, you know, we have a plan, don't worry, everything's proceeding as expected. And it's like, oh yeah, it's like, oh yeah, it's business as usual till you show up on Monday and the doors to your business, you show up for work and the doors are padlocked. It's like, okay, everything was fine when I left. Nobody told me anything. And you'd be surprised how often that happens to people. So yeah, you just don't know. But let's hope that it actually does come out in the first half of 2026.
That's all I got.
Yep, that's all I got too.
All right. Well, if people want to reach out to us, what do they do?
If you want to reach out to us, the email is lanterncast@gmail.com. The website is lanterncast.com. You can follow us on Blue Sky, Twitter, like us on Facebook, #geocast. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, wherever you listen to us on. Please leave us a positive review. Last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a text or a voicemail, 708-LANTERN, and let us know what you think.
All right, everybody. We'll talk to you later.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.